All right, hour number two, we're going to get you right up to kickoff right here on Sports 1140, KHTK. And as a reminder, all guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. And each and every week, we are blessed to be with a guy like Brian Baldinger, NFL Network, Baldy, with his Baldy breakdowns on social media. You can learn a lot. We had Charles Davis on 2 days ago talking about how much he loves following Brian Baldinger on social media, and you can too. Again, he's a great follow. You learn a lot, in my opinion. It's at Baldy NFL. Brian Baldinger joining us each and every week. Baldy, it's Grant and Doug. How are you today?
Hey, Grant, Doug, I'm doing great, man. Good to be with you guys.
Baldy, I loved your Baldy breakdowns of the Cowboys against Seattle. So let's go over some of the issues and why they're struggling so much offensively.
Well, I mean, it was everything that, you know, that makes you struggle. I mean, they converted one third down in the game, and in the third down they did convert, they actually scored. And it wasn't like it was third and 14. I mean, they missed on third and one, they missed on third and two, and they're missing assignments up front. I mean, blocking assignments there. Then when you get to the third and eights and third and nines, I mean, if you're not doing something to create separation, if you don't have Odell Beckham or you don't have Mike Evans, if you're not helping those, I mean, if those guys can't beat one-on-ones, you're in trouble. But if they can't, then you better figure out a way to create space so that the quarterback has, Dak has somebody to throw it to. And on a couple of occasions, he had nobody to throw it to. Nobody was open. They're just literally running to get covered. That's what it looks like on tape. And so, you know, look, Ezekiel Elliott had a great game, but you can't run out of bounds on a play that you might score a touchdown on in a game that you need a touchdown in. And you run out of bounds and, you know, you're illegal, come back and touch the ball. I mean, they have three tight ends on the field. They go in motion and Tavon Austin doesn't, you know, back up. So they have eight on the line of scrimmage and the play gets killed. I mean, just every single mistake you could make, they made.
Baldy, when you look at Carson Wentz, first game back, obviously they won the game. Is he what they need to continue to take that next step to defend the Super Bowl? And does he look healthy to you?
He looked awesome to me. He was really good. I mean, there were some plays in that game where you go, that guy had a knee operation 9 months ago? Really? I mean, he was back to – just being a human joystick at times at 6'5 and 240 pounds, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, physically, he looked really good. You know, they went to 13 personnel, Doug. I mean, that's one back, three tight ends. Now, not a lot of teams will run 13 personnel up and down the field, but they didn't have any wide receivers that they could count on.
Right.
Nelson Aguilar. So they had to kind of adjust the game plan. So the rookie tight end, Dallas Goedert, really, you know, shined. I mean, he was awesome and caught a first touchdown pass. But I thought Carson was really good in his first game. I think he's only going to get better from there. He had to get some rust off. He hadn't played at all. But I think considering he hadn't played at all in 9.5 months, I thought he was really good.
Baldy, let's talk a little bit about this game tonight. I mean, I don't know how on earth you can be that bad at home against a team like Buffalo. Vikings on a short week have to go to the Rams. Now, we know they're banged up in the secondary. Give me your thoughts on this matchup that's going to start in a little over an hour.
You know, every single team that is a severe underdog in a game this year, they should go back and watch how Buffalo played that game. Because at the end of the day, all that matters is how hard you play. Mm-hmm. And the 22 guys that are on the field for Buffalo, they played as hard as you could play. And it wasn't any fancy scheme, and it wasn't some, you know, master game plan. It wasn't any of that. They just outplayed the Vikings up and down the field all day long. They chased the quarterback from beginning to end. They knocked the receivers around. The quarterback was just exceptional in how he plays the game for Josh Allen in his second start. I mean, that's how you play the game. Now, can the Vikings recover? They have to. But, you know, the Rams are on it with their team to lead Marcus Peters. And so that, you know, that says on paper, that should be really good, you know, for Diggs and the receivers there. But this Rams defense is the number one defense in football right now, in the large part because their front is controlling the games. And so The Vikings are not strong on the offensive line, so it could be a game where Ndamukong Suh and Michael Brockers and a guy named Aaron Donald kind of shine. So it's a great test all the way around. Last year, the Rams went to Minnesota week two, Grant, and they got it handed to them. And Sean McVay completely changed the offense after that game. He stopped going shotgun. He got Jared Goff under center. He started featuring the running back, Todd Gurley, and they have never looked back since that game. So it was a watershed game for the Los Angeles Rams. But I think the Rams' offense will look really good tonight.
Baldy, focusing on the Vikings a little bit, looking back at last week, losing to the Bills, being on in team sports, playing to the level of your competition, sometimes it speaks a lot about you. What do you think that loss says about this Vikings team?
Well, you know, I don't know if they were looking ahead to the Rams. I mean, the head coach, I kind of hard to believe he played for Mike Zimmer and look ahead. I mean, there's nothing about that guy that says, you know, that's how they would practice or
right.
prepare or anything like that. Not with that guy. But, you know, they were kind of just lollygagging around. It looked really important to Buffalo, and Buffalo was jumping around like little kids out there, jumping into each other's arms. I mean, it was unbridled joy that
wow.
they played the game with. That's how you're supposed to play it. And, you know, if I was Mike Zimmer, I would just show the aftermath of how excited Buffalo was. You can get lulled to sleep in this business when all you guys are Pro Bowl players and you were number one in the league in defense last year. You can be lulled to sleep by all of that stuff. And then a team of just a bunch of castaways and also Rams and all the guys that make up the Buffalo Bills right now, they come in there and steal your lunch money. And that's what they did.
Baldy, last week we were talking about how bad the Giants' offensive line looked, and you said the one thing that you saw in looking at the film was that it's fixable, and then before the game, they bench Eric Flowers, they start Chad Wheeler. What were the differences you saw on the offensive line against Houston, if any?
Well, I mean, look, J.J. Watt, you know, took Chad Wheeler to school, you know, took him behind the woodshed, except for that.
Right.
Except for that, you know, I mean, Chad Wheeler's a young player making his second or third start. But, I mean, except for that, they played better as a group up front, much better up front. And, you know, they didn't blow assignments up front. The stuff that I said was correctable. They didn't do those kind of things. And so Eli played as well in that game as he has probably since the last Super Bowl that he was the MVP in. Mm. He was absolute flawless in the game. I think he missed four throws all day. You know, and when they took Odell and Latimer and Shepard away, he threw it to, you know, Red Ellison for a touchdown.
Right.
I mean, he went where he's supposed to go. And, you know, at the end of the day, Odell got his – everybody got their touches. And Eli was awesome. But up front, they played much better together as a group outside of, you know, J.J. making a few plays.
Baldy, the Buccaneers this week have the Chicago Bears, and that is one heck of a defense. Last week, they get away from the Steelers. How long – And I don't know if Ryan Fitzpatrick has built up enough cachet, but how long do you think Fitzpatrick holds off Jameis Winston, or is that even the conversation?
Well, it can be in the conversation, but, you know, I mean, they're not going to go away from Fitzpatrick right now as long as he's playing pretty well. They put up 27 points. So, I mean, he did make some mistakes in the game. Pittsburgh was a better team on Monday night. But I think Fitzpatrick has the respect of everybody. He's always going to have the respect. He's prepared. He knows how to play.
Mm-hmm.
The receivers are getting – I mean, Mike Evans is having a monster season right now.
Right.
You know, if DeSean Jackson's punt return doesn't get called back in that game, they might win that game. So he's given them a chance to win, even with the mistakes that were made. And they weren't all his, but the mistakes always fall on the quarterback's shoulder. So I would say it's his job right now until it's not his job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody will probably know when it's not his job anymore, when he just – falls apart out there or, you know, is not moving the team and they're not responding. And that might run its course at some point, but as long as that team is going up and down the field like they are, they're going to stay with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm. Baldy, after breaking down and watching Aaron Rodgers since hurting the knee, project to me how you think this thing is going to end up going. Is this a guy that, are you fine? No, don't practice during the week. Come up on Sunday. Where is his game right now on a scale of 1 to 10? If 10's the best we see with Aaron Rodgers, where is it right now in your opinion?
I would say, you know, if 10 is what we're used to seeing, you're not going to see the magical plays. But they're still there. I mean, they had four major drops in that game that could have really affected the outcome of the game. I mean, the ball was right on the tee to catch. And, I mean, it was everybody. You know, Randall Cobb dropped one, and Devontae Adams dropped, and they all dropped. But he doesn't have the elite escapism that he has. Now, that may work to his favor, and it may work to the offensive line's favor if he's able to just stay a little bit more composed in the pocket. It sounds bizarre, but Steve Young became a better quarterback when he wasn't running all over the field. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be curtailed a little bit. It doesn't affect the way he really throws the ball. He's still throwing. It was raining from beginning to end in that game.
Right.
He didn't have any problem gripping it, throwing it, eluding pressure. He's able to still do some things, just not at the elite level that we're used to seeing. And I don't know that we're going to have that he's going to have elite athleticism as long as he keeps playing every week. And he's going to keep playing until he just simply can't play right now.
Baldy, the Texans, 0-3, do we put too much on Deshaun Watson? You're thinking that, okay, you're going to get the defense back, and all of a sudden you get J.J. Watt back. And right now, what's the thing that's not clicking for them?
Well, they're the worst defense. I mean, the New Orleans Saints are the worst defense right now, but they're not playing good defensively.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't play well at all last week defensively. They're just, you know, teams are taking DeAndre Hopkins away, and they're saying, okay, Ellington, you know, let's go someplace else with the ball.
Right.
I mean, I see that now, you know, over and over again. So they're kind of limiting. The Patriots took him away and wouldn't let him, you know, get open at all the whole day. So you can't keep forcing it down the field. You're going to have to find some things underneath. So you're going to have to move it in different ways. You're not getting the splash plays right now that Deshaun made a year ago. He's not playing poorly.
Right.
You're just not getting, you know, 19 touchdown passes in six games like last year. You're just not – they're not letting them get those plays down the field. And teams have been really good. Tennessee was really good. Last week the Giants were good. They're just not giving them those plays right now. So he's going to have to take some underneath stuff, and he's going to have to move it a little bit more methodically than they did a year ago.
Baldy, final thing for you. The injuries on the defense for the Atlanta Falcons, three arguably of their best defensive players out. Is that going to be too much to overcome for them?
I think so. I mean, first of all, you can't find safeties in this league to begin with, Grant. You can't find pass rushers. You can't find anybody. But you lose your starting safeties, and it's just hard to just – I mean, Ricardo Allen is – he's just a computer back there. And he's a kid that nobody believed in, couldn't do it, small school, all that stuff. And there he is. And Cat O'Neill is just an enforcer in the middle of the field. And then you lose – you know, when you lose Deion Jones, you know, he had more tackles last year than Bobby Wagner, than Luke Kuechly.
Wow.
The guy is a tackling machine, and he never comes off the field, and he's a great cover man. So you lose the middle of your defense in the first 3 weeks of the season. I don't think you can overcome that.
Baldy, we'll talk to you next week, man. Safe travels this weekend. Awesome stuff.
Okay. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next week.
He's great, isn't he?
He is, Grant. I would agree. Listen, he did sound like John Gruden there when he said he can't find pass rushers for a second. That Falcons team looks to be in trouble. Can you find ways to make it happen? I'm Deshaun Watson. I you know, that was one of those teams that maybe was flying under the radar, but you'd think defensively that was going to be kind of the staple of what they do. And to be this bad defensively is kind of shocking. I would say the same thing about the Saints, Grant. I thought that last year the defense for them paired with the offense of Kamara and Ingram and obviously Drew Brees, that's what took them to the next level. But to be this bad defensively early on is surprising.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And again, we touched on this, but the NFL has issued a clarification on what roughing the passer is, and they're
got to lay a pillow down first.
Pretty much,
okay.
You know, it's crazy. Troy Vincent, the executive vice president, put out a statement. All right, announcing that the NFL Competition Committee sent a video to teams, so it would clarify what legal and illegal hits against a quarterback look like. The video was released publicly, and they had four examples of hits that will still draw a foul, including the one that that broke the collarbone of Aaron Rodgers last year. And I agree with you that that was a little excessive, in my opinion.
'70s.
Yep. And so we'll see what happens. You know, we'll see exactly what happens. Now, Clay Matthews said that he read the statement, he watched the video. And he said this after watching it.
Okay.
Quote, "I don't know if that statement really expresses how they're going to call it moving forward. I'm sure what many, if not all NFL fans and players are hoping is that they're not changing the rule, but much like the helmet rule we saw in the preseason, it will change. But I said that after the Minnesota hit on Cousins and nothing changed last week. If that's the case, that's truly unfortunate because I think I speak on behalf of everybody that doesn't like the rule and the way it's being called and the way it's being officiated." You know what I'm going to say about Clay Matthews? I've never met Clay Matthews. I've never talked to Clay Matthews. I really respect this guy. I really respect how he has handled himself.
I mean, not blowing up on
right,
everybody.
Right, and being a professional and just, like, I have the utmost respect. I couldn't do that. If I were called for the penalties that he was, one that cost the team a game,
yeah,
I give him a lot of credit for the way he has handled himself.
You know, I equate it, Grant, to when they made rule changes in the NBA. And what ended up happening is we began to adjust. And I thought that that's what we would see with the NFL players. I think with the helmet rule, we've seen that. The tackling thing, I don't think the NFL was clear in the beginning, so it's hard. And if some of these just textbook fundamental tackles are now penalties, it's a problem because I don't know how you fix that. Do you spin him out? Do you throw him a forearm shiver and just knock the heck out of him? Do you go for the football? The problem is when you face a Aaron Rodgers when he is healthy, a Cam Newton, a Russell Wilson, who is either bigger than everybody or really flight on their feet and can get away from you. That could be a big thing during the game.
All right. If you want to call the show, 339-1140. 800-920-1140. Marcus Peters is active for the Rams tonight, so he is not inactive. He's active. A lot of people thought that the Rams cornerback would not. Now, there's been no specification yet of whether he is actually going to start or not, but he is active for the game.
Yeah, well, look, one thing about the NFL, if you need a guy and all of a sudden he passes his physical, you put pads on him and you send him out there on the field.
Yep.
Now, might he not know everything about playbooks and schematic and the different things, but that's where effort and enthusiasm and just going out there and getting after it and a lot of good things usually happen.
Good news that Matt Breida is back on the practice field. He practiced full today for the 49ers. You know, he's a guy, I mean, who knew who Matt Breida was back in training camp? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm being somewhat cynical, but this guy has been amazing.
Matt, 20-yard run Breida. That's his name. Because, I mean, that's pretty much what he does. You give him the ball, and he's going to get you about 20 from time to time. I'm happy for him, Grant. For the 49ers as well, because injuries look to be abundant, obviously, with McKinnon and then, Jimmy G. But hyperextending your knee, I was really impressed that he came back and played the way that he played. And now to be in full practice, good for him, good for the 49ers.
Yeah. And if you're a 49er fan, there was so much anticipation and enthusiasm. And, you know, before Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt,
mm-hmm.
He wasn't the Jimmy Garoppolo of last year.
He was not.
Okay? So, and I don't think he could have been the Jimmy Garoppolo of last year. I mean, he was playing at a level that...
He was undefeated.
Yeah, but he was also not only undefeated, but undefeated in, like, looked like... You
yeah.
Know,
he looked like right? Johnny Unitas. Ish.
So, I'm looking at Baker Mayfield coming into Oakland on Sunday, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing, you know this being a basketball player. When you are guarding somebody that you have video of.
It's different.
Yes. All right, so now we've got Baker Mayfield, who played very well in the second half against the Jets. The Raiders now are looking at some of his tendencies.
Okay.
And they've got a little bit of a better idea of how to handle Baker. I'm not saying that means they're going to just shut him out, but that's the NFL for you. And I said this earlier, that I think the Raiders are going to win this game. I'm not sold on the Browns yet. I mean, you're right about this. They could have very easily won game one against Pittsburgh in the rain.
Yeah.
They threw away the game in New Orleans.
Yes, they did.
And then they beat the Jets. But here's the problem I have with the way they beat the Jets. If Tyrod Taylor does not get a concussion, Baker Mayfield does not go into the game.
Right.
And I don't think they beat the Jets. And that is – I can't get that out of my head.
Well, see, this is Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield are the same in some respects because Baker moves around maybe not as well as Tyrod does. The difference – like, I don't think that – as an offensive coordinator, you're going to call a big difference in a game between those two. The difference is the ball comes out of Baker Mayfield's hand like it's shot out of a 30-odd six. That thing is – it's fired. Where I think the Raiders could be in trouble is if you look at that game where Baker Mayfield had some trouble, Grant, it was on pass rush. They knocked the ball out of his hands. Little things like that where the pressure came on him. Can the Raiders bring the type of pressure that is going to cause Baker Mayfield the problems that would make him turn the ball over and make him lose? They haven't done it as of yet.
The biggest issue I see for the Raiders is Myles Garrett, keeping him off Derek Carr.
Oh, boy.
But again, we're not talking about a Browns juggernaut here.
No,
okay?
We're not. But they're better than their record says they are, I think. I think that they could have won at least one of those other games. Now, they didn't, and that's Browns-ish. I get it. But there's a lot, I guess, for Browns fans to be excited for because the Baker Mayfield era is here.
Yep. Oh, it is here.
Yes.
And good for Cleveland because they need a guy like that. And, he reminds me, and I spent many, many years in Ohio, and I have a lot of my friends there. So I've followed the Browns through the Brian Sipe era, the quarterback, the interception in the end zone against the Raiders, Sam Ritigliano, Sam Weish, the drive. I mean, I've gone through, a lot of things with that team. I've seen a lot of stuff. Baker Mayfield kind of reminds me, and maybe I'm going crazy by saying this, when Bernie Kosar came to Cleveland, he completely rejuvenated that fan base and that football team and brought a lot of what I think I'm seeing right now in Baker Mayfield.
You know what I find interesting about Baker Mayfield, Grant, is everyone was worried about his personality and grabbing his crotch and all the stuff that happened.
Yep.
He has been ultra professional.
He's galvanized everyone.
And paired with the talent that he has, it's really good for Cleveland.
That's a great point. And you could see the way the players rallied around him on Thursday night.
Even in Hard Knocks, Grant, he took a huddle and he had really good control. I like the way he talks to his offensive linemen.
Yep.
I like the way he goes about it.
All right. When we return, your phone calls, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We have football coming up at 5 o'clock, the Rams and the Vikings, right here on Sports 1140. All right, we got football coming up in 30 minutes. We'll get you to Los Angeles. Rams hosting the Vikings. We've got NBA action on Monday for the Kings. They will continue 2-a-day practices tomorrow. And, we've had a lot of calls about, or a lot of texts, social media, everything, about the Kings rotation. I don't even think Dave Yeager knows right now. That's what you have 6 preseason games for. He obviously has an idea, but I'm not so sure that he could definitively pick the top 9 or 10 guys that are going to be getting the majority of the minutes right now.
You know, that's what training camp is for.
Yep.
That's what training camp competition, meaning both against your teammates but also against the other team. I mean, I've seen many times, Grant, where people have earned their job in training camp and in the preseason because all of a sudden they've stepped up to the point where, look, they're knocking down shots, they're playing, they've made themselves invaluable on the defensive. Normally, that's where you see it, on the defensive end of the court, and it's just something that a coach needs, and they're willing to make sure that defensively things are tightened up.
All right, we are talking about not only the Kings, but the other things going on in the NBA. Nothing new. We discussed this at length yesterday about the Minnesota Timberwolves. And again, I only going by the respected journalists that cover the NBA are saying that the asking price for Jimmy Butler is way, way high.
Really?
Yes. And that's why nothing has been done as of yet.
Well, since the T-Wolves told him not to come to Media Day, they've put that, in my opinion, put it out there that, look, this is really going to happen. Then you get Glenn Taylor, the owner of the T-Wolves. So they've kind of put themselves in a tough position because now, you know, sharks are circling, so it's going to be harder for you to ask for the haul that normally you might get for a Jimmy Butler.
Adrian Wojnarowski said that the asking price, okay, it's just too high right now. He said the asking price for Jimmy Butler remains quality veterans, top prospects, future assets, and salary cap relief. That is from Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe from ESPN.com.
So you want what you gave up for him, pretty much.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, you're not going to get a Zach LaVine, a Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen. It's unfortunately not happened because you put it out there that he is on the trading block and people are going to hold on until you get desperate enough to let him go for the type of things that are probably out there right now.
Yeah. Now, would the longer this situation goes on, the worse it is for Minnesota, because you got a season that starts in 3 weeks. You've got a lot of distractions going on. There's been nothing good, no good news coming out of Minnesota as regards to this. Is the last thing you want when you're getting ready to start a season.
And Grant, when I said that Tom Thibodeau is on the hot seat, it's going to get hotter and harder, in my opinion, for him, because people are looking at him like, yo, man, this is your guy. This is the guy that you brought in here to mortgage all of our young talent. Now we're sitting here with two guys. Yeah, we got Andrew Wiggins and we got Carl Anthony Towns, but you brought in a guy who's whatever you want to call him. But he is his guy that plays his way.
Woj and Zach Lowe reported that the Heat are aggressively trying to get Butler, but Minnesota's counter, according to these two, was a non-starter because along with Butler, Miami had been willing, according to this report, to accept Gorgui Dieng and the remaining $48 million left on his contract. Now, I may be nuts for saying this.
Damn, 48.
I like Dieng.
I do too.
I don't think that you're taking a guy that can't play. I think Gorgui Dieng can play, and I'm not saying that the money left on his contract is something I would want, but I don't think you're getting a stiff in this guy. I like Gorgui Dieng.
Listen, he has improved
as a
shooter.
Yep.
He plays on the defensive end. We've watched him many times, Grant, and you and I
think he
on
needs to change the scenery. That's what I think.
Probably does. But his size and length, he's active. He rebounds the bat. I like the kid. So, yeah, you might talk about his $48 million. I get that part.
And I haven't asked, you know, the Kings have an assistant coach on their staff that coached Dieng and Bielitsa in Brian Gates. He was in Minnesota. He knows these guys. Next time I see him, I'm going to ask him about Gorgui Dieng, because you know what? I like Gorgui. Every time I see him play, I'm like, wow, okay, good. Man, I've heard that a lot of the players, and I hate to keep on going over and over this, but we have a new audience every 15 minutes. There are a lot of players that don't like playing for Tom Thibodeau, and I wanted to ask you this as well.
Okay.
We heard about the comments that James Harrison made about Le'Veon Bell.
Yes.
Not about him, but what he would do.
Right.
Now, we haven't heard Le'Veon Bell. And I wanted to bring this up in both basketball and football. Assuming that Le'Veon Bell comes back right before week 10.
Okay.
Because he doesn't want to lose an accrued year.
Yep.
Okay? Now, I didn't play professional sports, but I played Division I sports, and I know this. And I don't even think you and I are the experts on this, or I even have to. I think anyone that's listening, whether you are going to work or whether you're going to school or whether you're going out to play sports, you know, if your heart is not right and you're not really into it, you're not going to be able to produce. So I wanted to ask you, because you've played for a lot of different coaches.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not on board with the coach as a player, How difficult is it to play at a maximum level and at your peak efficiency to where Doug Christie or player B or player C or player D is you know,
it's tough.
You know what I mean?
No, I do. You know why it's tough, Grant? Because you watch players all the time. They make a mistake, and what do? They look over at the bench. Because normally the
quick
coach
hook.
Yep, there's a quick hook on you. Because if you're not on the same page with the coach, guess what? The coach probably has somebody who he's on the same page with. That's why when you look at Jimmy Butler and you look at Andrew Wiggins, the coach necessarily, in my opinion, isn't on the same page with Andrew Wiggins, but he's paying him so much money that he leaves him on the floor. That's why he brings in Jimmy Butler to say, this is how you do it. And There's that thing. It is definitely difficult when the coach is not on the same page to you as you for you to deliver and play freely enough to show your wares on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, so when I hear that, and I hate to – I like Tom Thibodeau. I mean, I enjoy talking to him. I think he's a tremendous basketball mind.
Yeah.
But I'm also not in that organization. But I have a lot of friends in Minnesota – some with the team, some not with the team. I know the media, the writers, and I'm hearing that and I heard the same thing in Chicago. A lot of guys don't like playing for Tom Thibodeau.
Well, from my understanding, what I hear, Grant, is he's a grinder. And we witnessed a game. I was doing it with you. We were in Minnesota. Kings are losing the game.
Yep.
Minnesota's up. There's only a few minutes left in the game. The game is in the balance. The Kings aren't coming back. But he still has his starters out there.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, and I know you are too, is like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that for? Take them out. Get them a rest. And he's the type of coach that is going to grind them into practice and what have you. And for especially in this day and age where we see guys sitting out, rest, a lot of different things, they probably don't like that.
Yeah.
Or it needs to be paired with production, meaning that we better be winning some damn games, Grant. We need to be, you know, 60 and, you know, 22 or whatever. Not one game play-in and you're beating the heck out of us like this.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Here's another thing you asked me last hour, and I've been thinking about this. Here's another thing I'm really looking forward to seeing in the preseason.
From the Kings?
The Kings.
Okay.
I have been very impressed with what I've seen from Skal Labissiere.
Yeah,
I'm really impressed with his body.
Yeah.
It is significantly different.
Yes, it is.
He is significantly stronger. And in the limited workouts that I've seen, his shot looks phenomenal.
Well, he shoots it.
Okay, so that might be your stretch four.
It is definitely possible. I would agree. The strength, you can see it.
Yes.
He's bigger. Now, what does that do for his mobility, and will he be able to keep some of that on? Because a lot of times we see guys come into training camp and they look one way, and after about 2 months, some of that goes away because
yep.
you're not able to work out the same way. So if he's able to keep that, if he added that muscle and that strength and he paired it with mobility – that in agility, that's going to be the big thing because you still need to be able to move. And a lot of times we see guys get bigger and it hurts their knees and different things like that. But I will say, Scal's jump shot is about as pretty as it gets.
Great.
It's soft, and he shoots it with thinking that I'm going to make it.
Hey, all guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. In a couple of moments, you and I will give our picks for tonight, the Vikings and the Rams. From Los Angeles, and then we'll do the rest of our picks tomorrow. Boy, last weekend was upset weekend, so I don't think you and I did very well in our picks.
Doesn't matter.
But I got to tell you.
No one's banking on us. Everybody was upset.
I picked
Grant.
Buffalo to beat Minnesota, though. I went on a limb and said that.
I think that was your lock of the week.
it was my lock of the decade.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Listen, there was.
Hey, that's why I don't gamble.
Listen, those the pools
yeah.
like around here, that thing's almost over already because of the upset in the first 2 weeks. So it might have to start right back up before midseason.
All right, we'll come back. We'll give you our picks. We'll get you ready for Thursday Night Football next right here. Sports 1140 KHDK. All right, so here we are, week four. We're going to have it for you right here on Sports 1140, KHTK.
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm going to let you go first.
All right, make it easy.
The Vikings and the Rams from the Coliseum in La La.
The Minnesota Vikings and Kirk Cousins. Dalvin Cook with a bit of a hamstring, but he is going to play.
Yep.
You got Thielen, you got Diggs at the wide receiver, which lends you to believe Talib and Marcus Peters are out. So it's like,
well, Peters is active for the game tonight.
Exactly.
Talib's out for
a
while.
He, the way they took him off the field, you think Peters is dinged up. Too much Donald, too much Sue. I think Jared Goff, with all the weapons that he has with Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks, all these guys, Cooper Kupp, I think, and you talk about, you know, it's a Thursday night game, it's on the road, you talk about that's points. Mm-hmm. I think right now it's the Rams are like a 7-point favorite,
right,
which would mean probably 10 because you usually get 3, don't you? So I'm going to go with the Rams at home tonight, Grant.
All right, I'm going to do it a lot quicker than you just did. I'm taking the Rams.
Hold on, what time are we off? I'm trying to freaking help you out over here, man. What are you talking about?
Now it's my turn. I'm taking the Rams because they're a better team. All right, let's move on.
Okay. All right. See, you want to move on, so I'll let you go now. I'm trying to help us, man. We got like 12 minutes here.
Everything you said is very true, so I will just say ditto because you are 100% correct
in terms of
your breakdown of these games.
Yes. I think the Rams, Donald and Sue, they're going to be in the backfield. I think they probably turn Kirk Cousins over maybe once or twice, and too much Rams tonight.
You know what? I think that the NFL should not allow these type of games on Thursday nights. And, like, for instance, what we saw last Thursday, all right, you know what? The Jets in Cleveland, it's a one-hour flight. You're in the same time zone.
Okay.
But when you're taking a team and you're making them fly 3.5 hours – and changing 2 time zones, I think that is really unfair on Thursday Night Football. If you're going to keep Thursday Night Football, and a lot of people don't want it, but if you're going to keep it, have the teams in the same time zones, please. You know what? It's just ridiculous.
That makes a little bit of sense because it is, when you talk about a short week and all of that, to travel, all the different things that go along with it, it puts you in a little bit of a deficit. That's why but Rams are better, so it doesn't even matter here.
The issue that I see in this game tonight, I think the Rams are going to score over 30 points in this game.
They've been doing it all year.
Right, and I don't see how the Vikings be able to match. It's like trying to outscore the Warriors.
Now, I will say this, Grant. You're probably going to get the best of the Vikings tonight coming off of what happened at home versus the Bills. Whatever their best punch is.
Their attention has been
caught
by the coach, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Listen, he's been in them all week. It hasn't been a long week, but I'm sure film sessions and all. So you're going to get the best punch, and if the Rams are able to handle that, this could be a bad one to watch.
All right. So we've got Thursday Night Football. We're going to get you out to the Coliseum in about 10 minutes.
Yes, sir.
All right, so we'll have all the action right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Real quickly on the baseball front, the Yankees win earlier. The A's are off. So with 3 games left, all right, the Yankees are going to have to lose all 3 games and the A's are going to have to win all 3 games, all right? So, you know, it's not done yet. The magic number is 1. One loss for the A's, 1 win for the Yankees, and the game will be in New York on Wednesday.
Sorry I couldn't help you out last night. Those A's smacked
us. That's okay.
Us.
I told you, I don't want to back into anything. And if the Yankees win 2 games this weekend, they'll have 100 wins for the season.
Wow.
Joining Boston and Houston as the other 2 teams in baseball with 100 wins.
Man,
those, isn't that something?
Yeah, that is. Those Astros flying under the radar little bit.
You know who else is? Cleveland.
Yeah. I would say so. Even 89 and 69 right now, Grant, you're right. If they can find their mojo, they're a little removed from their World Series appearance, what they lost, but it's possible.
All right, so the real story is in the National League.
Yes.
All right?
Oh, boy.
The Cubs have a 1-game lead in the loss column over Milwaukee. The Rockies have a 1-game lead in the loss column over the Dodgers.
Oh, boy.
And the Dodgers are in San Francisco starting tomorrow night. for a three-game set.
Oh, boy.
All right? How's that for you?
Dude, that's going to be – listen, does it get any better than that?
All right, so here's your schedule. These games, this weekend schedule, when you look at who has the advantage, the Nats are in Colorado to close out the season.
Okay.
The Dodgers are in San Francisco to close out the season. The Cubs are at home against St. Louis, and Milwaukee is home against Detroit.
Okay. Milwaukee, Detroit, that plays into Milwaukee's favor, but I think they clinched already.
No, they did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. This Dodgers matchup is going to be.
But the reason why I said that is they can still win the division.
Okay. Okay. You know, that Dodgers Rockies thing, if they end up playing each other at some point, that whole home field advantage thing is going to be tough because Kenley Jansen can't go to.
I know.
That could play huge into what happens in the National League. Wow.
So Madison Bumgarner on the hill tomorrow, and you just wonder how many Giants are we going to be watching this weekend at AT&T against the Dodgers that may not be on the team next year.
Well, I could think of two, Bum and probably
Pence. Hunter Pence.
Pence, yeah. And for Giants fans, so many great memories that I'm sure that Giants fans will take full advantage of showing those guys what they mean to them just in case.
All right, so that's the baseball story. We got NFL football, and then tomorrow Doug and I will go over the rest of the NFL schedule. All right, we're going to have our picks tomorrow. We're going to also talk some NBA basketball. But coming up next, it is Thursday Night Football. It's the Rams and the Vikings from Los Angeles. And you're going to hear it right here on Sports 1140 KHTK.